Welcome to Mystical Dispute, the limited Magic the Gathering debate podcast. I'm Garrett Gardner, a.k.a. G-Guards.
And I'm Carl Chase, a.k.a. 2DuckCubed.
Check out our monthly bonus mini-episodes on patreon.com/mysticaldispute, and thanks to our patrons. And today, we are going to discuss early 17 lands data impressions for Phyrexia, All Will Be One.
Garrett, before we start, we typically shout out 17 lands every episode, but I want to give an extra special shout out to Rob and ZTM over at 17 lands. There were some issues with the way that the data logs came out this time, and I'm not going to go into detail because I don't fully understand it, but either way, it meant that they had to do a lot of rework to get 17 lands data going this time around, but they put in a bunch of work and it's back up and running, and now we all have data to consume and look at, so we greatly appreciate it, Rob and ZTM over at 17 Lands. Thank you for your hard work so that we have all this lovely data to look at.
Yeah, seriously, I feel like the limited community has exploded in the ability to talk about stuff because of 17 Lands. It just gives us so much to look into, to evaluate, and maybe argue about. And I just appreciate them so much. So huge shout out to 17 Lands.
And Sirkovitz put out a post on Twitter a couple weeks ago mentioning that Rob, the founder of 17 Lands, has actually paid a lot of money out of his own pocket to keep that thing going, as well as hundreds and hundreds and probably thousands of hours. So please, please go check out them at patreon.com. And if you're able, support them. Anyway, let's get to
In This Corner.
Opening takes.
So for this episode, Carl, we're going to take a look at the first couple days of the new format's data on 17 lands, and you, the data nerd, is going to go through and tell me what is and isn't a good conclusion to draw from this data, and then maybe we'll argue a little bit about our experience with the format so far. Sound good?
Excellente.
But before we move on, some of you may remember I had some choice words for the community at the beginning of the Brothers War. And let me say, it doesn't sound like they were particularly heard, Carl.
Go on.
Now, there is so much great content that comes out during preview season. Evaluations, people building skeletons of the new format, breaking down the cards, doing individual card reviews. It's great. But you know what I don't think is great, Carl, is when I see on day one overwhelming tweets. I hate this format. This is the worst format ever. They really messed this one up. Oh, I've all figured it out. It's obviously this or it's that or it's aggro or bombs or whatever. Listen, I don't want to go on this rant every time, guys. Sit down, calm down. You haven't figured it out yet, okay? You might have your theories, you might have your guesses, but you don't know what the format's going to be like. And we're recording this episode a little later, and it's starting to subside. I'm seeing people, you know, rolling back their initial negativity. That's great, but maybe remember this next time, okay? Magic is fun. It's a fun game. Give it a chance. Because let me tell you, this format is a lot of fun to me so far. And yeah, you might have your reservations, but just do me this solid and say, I have reservations. Don't say it's horrible right off the bat. Please, please, I beg of you.
So when people say it's the worst format of all time on day one, that's not good of you?
No, no, Carl, I wouldn't say so. I wouldn't say it's the worst format of all time when you've only played it for less than 24 hours. I mean, seriously, every format is good for at least a couple weeks. You've got this exploratory phase. Just go through and play the games. Maybe you can complain about it in a couple weeks, but just give us this first couple weeks, please.
You guys can't see, but Garrett's beard is actually on fire right now. It's smoldering.
Listen, we just did a series on variants and how that can be so tilting. So I understand if something's frustrating you, but just take a break. Come back in a couple days and give it a freaking goddamn fucking chance.
And Garrett lives in a van down by the river.
Anyway, Carl, let's actually break some of this cool stuff down in Data Crunch.
You should definitely leave that last part in as opposed to turning it into the voice. Again, as we mentioned before, Garrett always mimics what the voice is going to say, even if he already has a pre-recorded voice. He just likes doing it that much.
It's so much fun.
Every time he'll be like, data crunch, even if he's not going to use it.
I can't help myself, Carl. I'll admit it.
Every time. All right. Now that we had that fun rant aside, let's do some boring data shit. What do you say?
Ooh, so enticing, Carl. Let's jump right in.
I know. Now that we have our beautiful, precious data available to us, the good news is I don't have to do my typical rant about how much we know so far and if there's enough data yet, because there's plenty of data. Because of the 4 or 5 day gap in terms of when the first data was available, we have plenty of data at this point. It's rock solid. The takeaways that you are going to see when you look at the information out there are not your typical, like, well, this could change. Well, it, you know, is subject to a lot of difference. Like, for the most part, what you're seeing now is going to be very representative of where we're at the end of the format. And the big overarching takeaway is that Naya colors, red, green, and white, are the strongest colors so far. Now, I know some of you might be out there saying, listen, I figured out how to make blue-white work, or I figured out how to make red-black work, or whatever. And yes, there's probably some unexplored ground in the blue and black colors, and I'm sure there are some excellent decks featuring those two colors out there. Not what I'm talking about, though. What I'm talking about is overall, across all of the games that we've seen coming through 17 lands so far, people are by far having the most success with red, green, and white.
And Carl, this point that you're highlighting right here is sort of why I feel so strongly about my opening rant. Because yeah, we can probably figure out pretty quickly what the more powerful colors are on average. But the cool part of limited is when really creative limited minds get together and they figure out those other side decks. That's what the rest of the format is going to be about, a shifting meta where people find hidden treasures and gems and strategies throughout the format.
Absolutely. I think we bring it up a lot, but blue-red in Midnight Hunt was a very late developing deck. Mm-hmm. You had a couple of really strong limited players and content creators pave the way and show how to make that deck work with Festival Crashers and such. Certainly, that can happen as time goes on. And yes, these stats will evolve. But without any shadow of a doubt, the depth of the format is in these three colors. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of ways that you can kind of look at this in the data. First of all, you can go check out the color performance tab on 17 lands, which is going to tell you how many games have been played by 17 lands players in each archetype, as well as the corresponding win rates. First thing you should always do is look at how many games are played in true two color decks versus two color plus splash versus three color, etc., etc. And oh boy, is this format a two color format. Out of the 150,000 games we've got so far, 115,000 of those are in two color decks. So that's 65% of the decks are pure two color decks, and then another 25,000 are two color plus splash, which now you're over 90% of the decks in base two colors. So that means that you can pretty much just look at the two color pair win rates and number of games played and trust the takeaways there. Red green is not only the archetype that has been played the most, but it also has the highest win rate at 59.1%, which is 3 points higher than the two color win rate of 56.1% and 4 points higher than the average win rate of all decks of 55.1%. And whenever you get the color that's got the most games and the highest win rate, you know that's real.
And I can attest to that. I think like 80% of my drafts so far have been green red, and it has been going pretty well for me.
Coming in second at 58.5%, about half a point behind Gruul, is Red White or Boros. And again, it has the second most games played as well as the second highest win rate. The next tier is Green White and White Black at 57.3% and 56.6% respectively. And then it starts to really drop after that. White Blue and Black Red, 54 and 55%, and everything else is not good. All below 53%. Another thing that you can do if you have a hankering for some quick Excel work, like I know many of you do, like me.
Oh yeah, I'm always itching to get that Excel running and put those cool numbers in my awesome little cells.
Perfect response. we can take the performance of all of the individual cards on the card performance tab on 17 lands and do a weighted average win rate. The more cards played, the more it's going to matter in this stat. That way you can just kind of see the total success of a color in total. If you look at it that way, red and white are the top two colors in game in hand win rate, coming in at about 57%, followed up by green at 56%, and black falls almost 2 points down at 54.3%, and blue 52.7%. That is really low for a color in total.
Yeah.
Where often you're not going to see a ton of variation if you've got pretty even strength across the colors, but that is almost 4.5 points difference between blue and white and red. And this is getting a little bit nerdy, and I started there with game in hand win rate, but you can actually go to games played win rate, and it tells you similar information, but actually by looking at the difference between the games played win rate and the game in hand win rate, you can pick up some other interesting information.
Like what?
So game in hand win rate can be a little bit biased towards more controlling cards. And what I mean by that is, in a control deck, the more cards you have in hand, the more likely you are to win, your win rate goes up. With aggro, the less cards you draw, the more likely you are to win. And so, for example, if you somehow go 30 cards in an aggro deck, you're going to see a lot more of your cards and be less likely to win, which means you're going to see more of your cards in games you lose and less of your cards in games that you win, right?
Yep.
And so my point about blue being the worst actually gets worse when you look at the games played win rate, where blue falls all the way to 51.6%. And again, that just means if you have this blue card in your deck, what is your win rate? 51.6%. And then you can also compare the two together. So if you compare game in hand win rate to games played win rate,
okay,
basically the higher the game in hand win rate is compared to the game played win rate, the slower the color probably is because of that bias that I was talking about. And the smaller it is, the more aggro-y or the faster the color is.
Sure.
For example, red, the games played win rate is actually a tenth of a point higher than the game in hand win rate, and it is very clearly the most aggressive color. Blue is 1.2 points better for game in hand win rate, which means it is the slowest color. So when you are looking at the game in hand win rate of blue cards and 17 lands, and this is the whole point of this complex nonsense that I just went through, it is actually biased high.
Jeez.
So blue has really been struggling out of the gate so far.
And Carl, we have talked about color imbalance in formats previously. It does happen from time to time with formats, and you're pretty confident, right, that these numbers will continue throughout the life cycle of one, right? Like, until the end, the Naya colors are just going to be doing way better, and blue is probably going to be suffering.
I would say there is a very high likelihood that those three colors end up the best three colors in game in hand win rate a month from now.
And I think it's incredibly good information to have, especially at the beginning of a format, to know which colors are performing better and what in general is performing better, which it seems like aggro is just better in this format. But, and we say this so often, but it is not the end all be all of this entire format. It is not just play Naya, don't ever play blue. It is just a good baseline for approaching how the cards are interacting with another on an average game amongst an average 17 lands player. And so maybe this is why I'm a lot more forgiving to formats than maybe some other people are. A lot of people are probably right about some of their assumptions that they had going into this format, but the fun part is figuring out how to upend that meta. Like I said before, figuring out which colors might start being underdrafted, and you can come up with strategies to utilize, I don't know, blue or Thrumming Bird or Proliferate or something like that. Like, eventually the meta will correct as people recognize, like, oh wow, red is so good, and red could become overdrafted. And so you should probably keep that in your mind when you're exploring this format. And this is what makes at least the first month of a format a ton of fun for me. And my biggest point here is you can't just look at these numbers and be like, well, the format is solved. These are the best colors. You should just force them every time, because it's just not how draft works. It's not how you're going to end up getting the best possible win rate out of the format. Would you agree with that, Carl?
100%. And I've got quick examples that I think highlight that. My buddy Lucas Faley, he posted 3 consecutive blue-white artifact decks that all look like great blueprints for that color pair. And I believe he got 3 straight trophies out of them. And so Luke, who is an amazing limited player, found a hole where this color pair kind of started to get underdrafted even early on and figured out the way to make blue-white really work and is having some early success with it.
And I know that the Lords of Limited, Ethan and Ben, are high on Eye of Malkator, which is a blue card, but it can be a 3-mana 4/4 that allows you to scry to. It's like there's certainly something to be found there. So while my point isn't ignore this data, it's important data to know that Naya colors are performing the best, because that will give you a good understanding of the existing meta and maybe give you a good jumping off point to countering that meta.
A very high percentage of drafts, especially early on in the format, and while I mentioned that we've got a lot of data so far, it's still early on, and so people are not always in as focused of archetypes as possible, right?
Yeah.
It is very clear that if you are unfocused in blue, you probably aren't going to win very much.
Yep.
Like that is crystal clear. The blue decks that seem to have success are extremely focused, and that's not always going to show up extremely well in the aggregated data in total.
And I think that's the crux of, I don't know, all of our episodes, Carl.
Yeah.
It feels to me like red-green is pretty streamlined. You know, you just play the red and green commons and they work together well. And so that's going to give it a huge bump in aggregate and average data, but the pieces seem to be there for me for other colors to shine and counter that. And of course, early on, it's going to take people a little bit of time to figure those out, but it's not just early on. That will continue throughout all the life cycle of the format, because the average player probably doesn't play that much, and the average aggregate data is just going to trend towards whatever strategy is the easiest to come together. And so more difficult hidden synergy can still be there, and it might actually be the best thing to do. And so anyway, it's a lot to say that give it time.
Red definitely benefits from just having the most generically solid cards at common.
Yep.
Whereas, again, my belief right now is that you need to be very streamlined with your blue decks, for example. And honestly, this was somewhat the case for me. I started about 2 or 3 days late playing Phyrexia All Will Be One. I was pretty busy at work, so I just didn't have too much of a chance to draft. So coming in, just looking at the data in total, we only had one day at the time, unfortunately, but just taking a look at it, I'm like, all right, looks like green, white, and red are the best colors, and so what are the best cards in there? I'm just going to try to go draft some of those and see what happens. While that's not the way that you necessarily want to draft for the entire format, it worked pretty darn well for me so far. Sitting at a 71% win rate early on, almost entirely off of the back of just looking at 17 lands data and working from there.
Absolutely, Carl.
From there, I think 17 lands can help you figure out what are the obvious best things to do in any color or any color pair or in general. And as you start to play with the cards, that's where you can figure out, okay, maybe there is some hidden gems out there that are underutilized. For me, so far, Basilica Skullbomb is a card that has a horrific win rate, but is a card that I kind of like in certain types of green-white toxic decks. Now, is it a card that I'm ever going to prioritize over the best cards? No, it's not, but it's going to find a spot here or there for me in certain types of those decks, especially ones where you've got some corrupted synergies and you just need to get that third point of infect in early on.
And Basilica Skullbomb, of course, is 1-mana artifact. You can pay 1 to sack it and draw a card, or you can pay 2 and a white to give a creature +2/+2 in flying and draw a card. That whole cycle of cards actually seems pretty powerful. Like, the effects are pretty good and it replaces itself. So I've been interested to see how they're all going to end up shaping up in the format.
The data on them is really bad so far. I get the sense that people are probably not cycling them quite often enough if they don't have a good spot to use the more expensive colored effect.
Right.
But it also just might be an indication of how fast the format is and not wanting to spend 4 mana on a medium cantrip effect.
And Carl, during our preview battle, we talked about how egregious the rares appeared to be in this format. A lot of them look near unbeatable, but the format is actually shaping out, at least as far as I can tell, in a way that's not so egregious. I think most people would agree at this point, it's a very aggressive slanted format. You need to be on the board by turn 2, and you gotta start attacking, and you gotta start doing your plan. And so these 7-drop bombs aren't playing out quite as well as they might look. Also, you go and check the top game in hand win rate bombs, and it's pretty comparable to some of the other formats we've played in recent times. You know, There's a few cards at 67% win rate. Obviously, they're amazing cards, but it doesn't seem like there's a higher concentration of those win rates than I honestly was assuming when I saw some of these ridiculous cards. Now, that's not to say that stuff like Dragging Wing Glider, the 4/4 hasty flying equipment, or Eternal Wanderer or Thrun are not insanely good cards. But I don't think it's shaping up to be quite the frustrating stain on the format that I was definitely assuming going in. So I'm pretty relieved to know that, to be honest.
The speed of the format means that you can't just rely on a 7-drop to win you games.
Yep. And beyond that, I believe that game in hand win rate for top cards does kind of trend downwards the longer that a format exists. And so since they're already pretty matched to some of the more recent formats, I think we might see a more flat game in hand win rate for this format overall than average.
Kaya at only 58%, for example, is really interesting. Because that card, if it comes down, I mean, it's going to just win almost all the games. So, you still have to play it, though. And 3WW BBB is a really tough casting cost when you're being attacked with toxic creatures on turn one.
Definitely.
Well, I'm not going to sit here and read you all of the top performing cards thus far. Certainly something that you can go out to 17 lands and take a look at yourself. I do think there's a couple of important themes that you see in some of the top performing cards. Number one, tempo matters. Obviously, that's the case, and we've been talking about that the whole episode, and if you've played the format thus far, you realize that very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But Crawling Chorus is a 1-mana 1/1, and it has the best game in hand win rate of all commons right now. That is wild, and yes, you get another body when it dies, and Toxic on turn one is super important because it allows you to get to Corrupted really fast, and it allows you to proliferate poison counters and all that. So, I mean, it's a card that I've loved, and I'm not saying that it's bad by any means. It's one of my favorite commons. But just a 1-mana 1/1 as a top performing card is wild. The other thing you'll see is that multiple bodies are very good. Basilica Shepherd is coming in at number 2, which makes 3 bodies. You've got Chimney Rabble coming in at number 4 right now. That makes 2 bodies.
That's a shocker.
And then, of course, Cheap Removal is doing extremely well. Whether you are on the offensive and trying to clear way for your creatures to get through, toxic or non, or just preventing your opponent from getting too corrupted or dealing you 20 damage like regular games of Magic, the best cheap removal is doing extremely well. And Planar Disruption, which is the pacifism plus stopping activated abilities and can also hit artifacts, Hexgold Slash that deals 2 to a creature or 4 to a creature with toxic, and Anointed Affliction, which exiles a creature at instant speed if its mana value is 3 or less, or any creature if you've got corrupted.
And the removal being good may be another reason that some of these egregious bombs are not blowing everything out of the water as we may have expected. And I wanted to add also on the tempo side of things, I love drafting lands that can scry or draw cards later in the game. And there's a cycle for each color in this format of tap lands that you can sack to draw a card. But in my experience so far, they're a little bit dangerous. Curving out is so important. Your early game is so important to not get overrun that I'm actually taking those tap lands a little bit lower than I normally do. And again, that is like my favorite thing to do in Magic is getting utility lands. So if I'm doing it, I feel like it's a good consideration that it might be slowing you down a little too much. 1 or 2 is probably fine, but once you get into the 4 and 5 range, that could be disastrous. And the game in hand win rates are pretty much below average across the board.
Even just a comparison of the 2 top red removal spells in Hexgold Slash and Volt Charge. Hexgold Slash is a full 2 points higher than Volt Charge. And Volt Charge not only can go to face for 3 damage, as well as a creature, 3 is more than 2, and it proliferates. So you say all those things together seem really good. But Hexgold Slash is still 2 points higher, and it simply just comes down to the fact that 1 mana is less than 3 mana, and this format is very fast. Finally, I know I mentioned the point earlier saying that the game in hand win rates for blue are even somewhat exaggerated because it's a slower color and the slow bias on game in hand win rate. But a slight counterpoint to that is when you have 3 colors that are performing so much better than 2 other colors, so Naya colors doing better than Dimir colors, once you are committed to a particular color pair, let's say in this case you're in black-white, the white cards are just generally going to have a favorable bias on win rate than the black cards because they're all supporting each other better on average than the black cards are. So take a card like Stinging Hive Master. Its game in hand win rate is all the way down at 55.3%. And you compare that to, you have 12 white commons that have higher than a 55.3% game in hand win rate.
Wow.
But if you flip to the white-black archetype, Stinging Hive Master is the fifth best performing common in that archetype. And yes, it probably pairs well with what white-black is trying to do in the fact that it's multiple bodies and it's toxic. But I think also a lot of what's happening here is because black is so weak and white is so strong in general, is that the win rate of the Stinging Hive Master is just being held down by black.
Right.
And so once you commit to that white-black color pair, just because a white card has a better win rate than the black card overall doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be best within that color pairing. So while you can always go to the individual deck types on 17 lands and figure out what's good in that particular archetype, one thing that might clue you into this dynamic that I just talked about is the improvement when drawn. So Stinging Hive Master, while only 55.3% game in hand win rate, does have a plus 1.6 IWD or improvement when drawn, meaning that decks perform better when they draw that card than when they don't when it's in the deck. That might give you somewhat of an idea that a card is being held down by the fact that the color pair in general is lagging behind. So just be very careful of that when you're playing blue and black in Phyrexia All Will Be One.
All right, Carl, let's wrap this baby up in
closing arguments.
Carl, this format took a beating on in release, but I have to say I've been enjoying it quite a bit. I'm not quite taking the backdoor approach to finding the secret synergies or anything. I'm just playing a lot of red-green for now, but I am looking forward to the meta shifting as the format develops. And one point that I always feel like we really, really have to drive home when we do these early data impressions is to respond to the common thing I see around a lot. 17 lands says that card is bad. 17 lands says this color is good or bad. That is, I think, not at all how you should be approaching early 17 lands data or any 17 lands data. It's just a data point in exploring a format, and it's a valuable one, but it's not the end-all be-all to an argument about a archetype, color, or specific card. Not by a long shot.
Garrett, that's a great point. I posted this on Twitter yesterday, that if you see a card that you think is really good but has a bad win rate on 17 lands, an unproductive thought is saying, this data is bullshit. That doesn't really help anybody. Doesn't help yourself. It's just not really an enjoyable thought to share with others and ruminate on.
It's all downside, is what you're saying.
It's all downside. On the other hand, a thought that I think can help you get better at the format is, okay, why is the data coming in low? Is it because I've figured out the best way to play this card so far, and it's potentially unlikely that the aggregated data is showing that? Or it might be, okay, well, what cards have a higher win rate than this card? And you go out and look at a few of those and say, maybe I figured out how to play this current card really well, but maybe I'm missing some hidden value in other cards. Again, it's a data point that can help make you think. And as long as you take the fact that these are aggregated win rates and what the sum total of all 17 lands users have had success with, there is information in that data point. It's not the end-all be-all. It doesn't tell you everything about the card, but it tells you something.
And Carl, my last thought is that if you don't like this format, that's fine. In fact, I think most people will probably not end up loving this format because I've noticed that more aggressive formats are not generally among people's favorites. But I really implore you to give it a shot. First couple weeks of even an atrocious format is still a lot of fun. Reading the cards, seeing the cool interactions, it's always fun for me. And if you're like me as well, I like aggressive formats. I think they're a lot of fun, they're rewarding, and the games are a lot faster, so you can get more in. And so, all that being said, I'm looking forward to the rest of Phyrexia All Will Be One, or All Is One, or whatever the hell it's called. It's like, cannot remember.
Garrett, I just had, you know, like one of those cartoon light bulbs that come over somebody's head.
Yeah, I actually saw it in the Discord call.
Yeah, you can see the grin on my face right now. I figured out why you're enjoying this format so far.
Oh, no. I should have seen this coming.
Toxic isn't really a dynamic ability. It's just a thing on top of an already vanilla creature, which means that this format has more vanilla creatures than any format we've ever seen before. And you love vanilla creatures. That's what it is. It's the vanilla format. That's why you love it. That's absolutely... Oh, man. It came to me. That's it. That's the thing. You just get to play all these 2/2s and 3/3s for 2 and 3. And
well, that about wraps it up. So thanks for listening to Mystical Dispute. You can support the show on Patreon. I'm Garrett Gardner. You can find me soon at twitch.tv/gguards.
And I'm Carl Chase. You can find me on Twitter at 2DuckCubed.
Shout out to 17 Lands for the data. Huge, huge shout out. Really, I feel like actually we end up doing this every episode, but seriously, we could not do this podcast without 17 Lands. Please, please consider supporting them on Patreon as well. And until next time, enjoy your vanilla format and stay chill.
Adios.
And Carl, we actually got a request. Lords of Limited, Ethan and Ben, they want to hear the voice saying...
For Mirrodin.
Carl, it's your turn.
For Mirrodin.
That one's for you guys.
Should you do one that's high too?
For Mirrodin.
Yeah, of course.
For Mirrodin.
For Mirrodin.
Yay.
Hurrah.
Nailed it.